Well, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will offer an update on the Lake Tahoe avalanche of February 2026. Since I first covered this case, much more information has become available, including the final report from the Sierra Avalanche Center. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the incident, then offer my analysis. On Sunday, February 15, 2026, two groups of guided backcountry skiing trips started near a mountain called Castle Peak. This is in the Sierra Nevada, northwest of Truckee, California, and near Donner Pass. The highest point on the mountain has an elevation of 9,109 feet. One group comprised 8 women and 2 guides. The other group comprised 3 men and 2 guides. All the guides were provided by the same service, Blackbird Mountain Guides. Both groups were taking a 3-day, 2-night backcountry skiing trip. Their objective was to make their way to the Frog Lake Backcountry Huts, where they would spend the 2 nights. These huts are in an elevation of 7,600 feet and, during the winter, can only be accessed by ski, snowboard, or snowshoe. During their time at the huts, they would ski the surrounding terrain. They would then return to the trailhead at the Castle Peak Snow Park on Donner Summit. The two groups successfully completed the 3.5-mile trek to Frog Lake, taking what is referred to as the Western Route. They enjoyed their 2 nights at the huts as planned, which included exhilarating backcountry skiing. There was still one adventure left, returning to the trailhead. Now moving to the timeline of the incident. On Tuesday, February 17, 2026, during the morning, the two groups merged for their trip back to the trailhead. So now there was one group of 11 skiers and 4 guides, 15 people in total. At 5 a.m., the Sierra Avalanche Center issued a warning indicating that a high avalanche danger existed in the backcountry. The probability of natural avalanches was rated as likely, and the probability of human-caused avalanches was rated as very likely. This is not surprising considering it had been snowing heavily for 2 days. For instance, at Castle Peak, the snow was falling at a rate of 3 to 4 inches an hour. The area was also experiencing high winds, gusting over 50 miles per hour, which led to poor visibility. The Western Route was now a dangerous choice based on the level of exposure to avalanche risk. The group had at least 3 other options available to them. They could take another version of the Western Route, which reduced exposure to avalanches. They could take the Eastern Route, which was much safer at the expense of being a mile longer, difficult to navigate, and placing them at a different trailhead, instead of where their vehicles were parked. Or they could stay at Frog Lake in the huts, where their safety would be all but guaranteed. For some reason, which defies logic, the guides decided to take the Western route with only a small modification. Instead of going through an area called the Frog Lake Notch, they would go around the back of Perry's Peak, which is a mountain with an elevation of 8,400 feet. This version of the route was very similar to the route they used to travel from the trailhead to the huts, with the one small change. The guides did not make any significant modification to the plan based on the avalanche danger. The group departed the huts and climbed up to Red Dot Pass, then descended the north side. They made their way into the valley below and transitioned to uphill travel. They eventually entered an avalanche runout zone below the north slopes of Perry's Peak. 2 members of the group fell behind due to a ski binding issue. In the final report, the clients and guides are referred to using numbers. These 2 members were client 11 and guide 4. With them falling behind, 13 skiers were now in the main group. At approximately 11 a.m., a ski guide in the main group yelled, "Avalanche!" after a large slab of snow slid 400 vertical feet down Perry's Peak. Client 10 looked up and saw a wall of white with blurs of colors, and realized those colors were the skis and the clothing of the other skiers. He dove behind a dead tree and was buried when the avalanche debris wrapped around it. Client 11 and Guide 4, who did not witness the avalanche, caught up with the group. Client 10 pushed away debris and yelled, "We have people buried." He pointed to the last location where he had seen anyone, and he called 911. Client 11 found Client 9, who indicated that he was okay. Guide 4 found Clients 7 and 8 and excavated enough to expose their faces. The group continued digging and found Guide 3 and Client 6, but they did not show any signs of life. The group returned to complete the excavation of Clients 7 and 8, who were injured. As it turns out, Clients 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and Guide 4 were the only survivors. Just 6 people were still alive. The other 9 people in the group did not make it. 6 female skiers, 2 male guides, and 1 female guide. The survivors descended to a spot away from the path of the avalanche, and Guide 4 constructed a shelter. Search and rescue teams made their way to the site of the avalanche, arriving at about 5:30 p.m. They rescued the survivors and found 8 of the 9 victims. They were buried in 3 to 8 feet of snow within an area measuring just 20 feet by 20 feet. This is roughly the size of a standard 2-car garage. The last victim was found a few days later. The final report released by the Sierra Avalanche Center stopped short of assigning blame. Rather, it highlighted decisions that increased exposure to risk. Now moving to my analysis. In my original assessment of this case, I believe that at least one of the guides was responsible for this disaster. I use the phrase, at least one, because it's not clear if there was a leader or if the guides all made decisions together. The final report only reinforces my initial opinion. Here's an updated list of factors supporting this theory. That is, at least one of the guides was responsible. Prior to the trip, the avalanche risk in the area of Castle Peak was already moderate, and the forecast indicated that blizzard conditions would be present in the area soon. A lot of snow was falling, and more snow was on the way. The huts at Frog Lake had an internet connection. The guides knew the avalanche risk was high. They were aware that other options were available, like taking the eastern route or remaining in the huts during the storm. One guide told the customers, "We have to get out of here now." None of the guides requested any feedback from the customers about the decision, and they never mentioned the option of staying in the huts. The modified western route that the guides selected did avoid one area of high avalanche risk, but it also placed the group squarely in another. The guides clearly understood the concept of keeping the skiers spaced apart. For instance, there were times on the trip when they sent skiers one at a time across steep slopes. Despite this knowledge, 3 of the guides allowed themselves and 10 of the customers to be in the same small area. In my original video, I noted that the customers and guides should not have been that close together. Only one person at a time should have traveled through high-risk avalanche areas. The final report agreed with this conclusion, stating, quote, "Exposing only one person at a time to avalanche terrain is an accepted best practice for backcountry travel," unquote. The region where the bodies were found was only 400 square feet. This doesn't necessarily mean that all the victims were this close to each other at impact, because the snow and debris could have moved the bodies and grouped them together. Even so, it is reasonable to infer, based on the size of the recovery area, that the horizontal spacing was probably not more than 20 feet. It seems unlikely that the vertical spacing would have exceeded 20 feet either. The guides had this group ridiculously close. They gave them little chance of survival in the event of an avalanche. Any closer, and they could have played Twister. If they had followed the proper spacing protocol, only one person would have been caught in the avalanche. That person's chance of survival would have been very high because all the other people would have been available to find them and dig them out of the snow. This brings me to the question, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. It appeared as though the guides inaccurately weighed the factors the group was facing on the morning of February 17, 2026. They put a tremendous amount of weight on hiking to the trailhead where the cars were parked. That was really important to them. There was no interest in taking a route that would bring them to a different trailhead, even though the other routes would have been much safer. They never even considered staying in the huts, so they put a lot of weight on the value of their own time. They wanted to get back to the trailhead as scheduled. One guide even indicated that the group needed to leave now, as if there was some urgency. In reality, there was no rush. Waiting was not only a viable option, it was the safest one. The guides did not give enough weight to the avalanche risk. They were a little worried about it. After all, they did slightly modify their route, but it wasn't a major concern. As they were making their way on the modified western route, the guides made a critical mistake by grouping the customers close together. Visibility was a major issue, So maybe they were worried about the customers spreading out too much and getting lost. It's also possible the guides didn't realize where the group was in relation to Perry's Peak, like they did not appreciate how they were passing through a dangerous area. They could not see well enough to accurately assess their location. If they thought they were in an area where the avalanche risk was low, they would not have prioritized the spacing. There is this sense that everyone was taken completely off guard by the avalanche, including the guides. This is consistent with a report about how some of the hikers were wearing avalanche airbag backpacks, but none of those backpacks were deployed. These backpacks are activated by pulling a cord. They inflate material around the hiker, which makes the hiker more likely to stay above the avalanche debris. It also creates an air pocket if they are buried. These backpacks are reasonably effective. It's unfortunate that no one was able to activate them. I think the bottom line with this case is that the guides really wanted to finish the trip as scheduled with no inconvenience. 9 people died to save a little time. The heavy price they paid should teach a valuable lesson to other backcountry skiers. Avalanches are nothing to be toyed with, and they have no interest in abiding by someone else's schedule. Those are my thoughts on the Lake Tahoe avalanche of February 2026. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.